All right. So my name's TJ Myhill. I'm an attorney here in Atlanta, and I do intellectual property, technology law, business law in general. But we are here to talk about some technology aspects. So we'll look at those. And I've got a good bit of experience working both for plaintiffs and defendants in these areas. So we see this pretty frequently. We're going to be talking about the DMCA. Specifically, we're going to talk about the triennial review, the changes that are being proposed and worked through right now. But in order to get there, let's first start with what the DMCA is. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act is designed. Well, I shouldn't say designed for, say attempted to take a 1970s Copyright Act and bring it into modern technology usefulness. It tried to adapt to things that didn't exist when the last copyright law was written. It also was designed to protect boat hulls. I don't know what that had to do with digital or millennium, but there it is. But it was basically a way to try to update the Copyright Act of 1976 without completely rewriting everything that was already there. They're just trying to take what was already there and make it work for new technology. Of course, all the new technology that's come out since even the Digital Millennium Copyright Act came out still makes it very difficult to actually be a useful act. That's the biggest problem with copyright in general. Really, any intellectual property or any law is trying to keep up with reality. And by the time laws are created, what they're created for has passed. And it's just the nature of the beast. We're always trying to play catch-up on our side. Especially when you've got a bill that passes, then it takes years before it ever gets before a court and we start working through some of the problems with it. And again, by that time, everything that was a problem, we've moved on. So it's the best attempt that Congress could put in to try and address some of the concerns people were having with technological uses of the under the Copyright Act. There are two major sections of the DMCA that really impact this track and people in these rooms and that we talk about pretty frequently year to year. Those two sections are the safe harbor provisions for ISPs and the anti-circumvention procedures that they made it illegal to circumvent technology barriers to copying. So the safe harbor is a neat little feature that allows ISPs to remove copyright liability for content put up by someone else on their website. If you follow certain procedures and you take certain actions, then you're not liable for anything that's up there. And without that safe harbor provision, you wouldn't have YouTube, you wouldn't have any blogs that allowed comments, you wouldn't have any news sites that allowed comments, you wouldn't have any user-generated content anywhere on the web. Otherwise, you could come to my website, put anything you want on there, and now I'm the one who's going to get sued for it, and so I wouldn't let you put anything on there. So the safe harbor provision has actually made a very beneficial advancement to technology. At the same time, it's been very, very, very misused. There are people who will now go out there and send out DMCA takedown notices on everybody and their uncle on content they don't even own, and just generally be harassing. Are there remedies for that? Sure. Do they cost money and time and effort? Sure. But there are people who are misusing the takedowns, but in general, it's a very good thing. The same is sort of true for the anti-circumvention provisions. What that says is that if somebody has put a technological barrier on their content that prevents you from copying or limits your ability to copy or limits your ability to play copies or things like that, then it would be a crime to circumvent those technological barriers. It's already a crime to copy something, but really, the problem with copying now is that it's just way too easy. Think about I'm in the 1500s and some master painter has just painted a beautiful, beautiful portrait, and I want to copy it. I have to go get some canvas and some paints, and I have to learn to paint, and then I have to paint that sucker all over again. And maybe I get a pretty good copy. And maybe it's a forgery, and maybe I sell it, and maybe I can make a lot of money, and that's illegal. But at the end of the day, I went through a lot of work to create that copy. Even 20, 25 years ago, if I wanted to copy your book, I stood there at a photocopier, and I copied each page, and then I turned the page, and then I copied that page, and I turned another page, and I copied that page. And I ended up with a weird little light crease where the spine was, and it was kind of lousy. So it was a lot of work, and you ended up with kind of a lousy copy. The problem now is, what do I do if I want to copy that brilliant image you created? Right click, and I get an exact copy of your brilliant image. What do I do if I want to copy your book? I scan it, I download it, I burn 8 million copies onto CDs or flash drives, or just put it up on the web and let everybody else have at it. And everybody has a perfectly good, perfectly clear, perfectly usable copy. And that has become a real problem. So all of the things that we have in place to sort of prevent those copies from happening, yes, it's illegal, and yes, there's copyright prohibitions if I find out about it, and if I can find you, and if I can go get before a court and spend a lot of money to get an injunction, we can get there. But at the end of the day, all my copies are still out there. So the ease of copying and the ability to copy perfectly has created significant issues with copyrights that there needed to be a way to address. So there was there was technology put in place to prevent that copying. And then in order to prevent people from just getting around that and copying, you had the Anti-Circumvention Act put in the DMCA to say that if there's something prohibiting you from copying, then it's a crime to remove that too. It's a crime to copy it. It's a crime to circumvent the technology. Now you've done two things bad. It just creates another level of protection for people who have the copies. The problem is that's been misused. Just like the people who misuse the takedown notices, you get companies who have put in extortionistic technology that requires you to only use their products, only use their services, only use their bundles, not be able to copy for your own home use. You can't copy your Blu-ray DVD over to a regular DVD so you can put it in the car DVD player and play it for the kids. You can't copy your software for use on your desktop and your laptop. All the things that sort of generally used to be allowed under the Copyright Act, it is no longer allowed under these technology barriers. And that's created some problems. And that's actually the biggest thrust of the triennial review. So we finally come around to the point of the topic. The triennial review this year, you can go to the Copyright Office and see what they're proposing. It's copyright.gov. It's actually a very user-friendly website. It's kind of fun to go poke around. Just go poke around. It's actually the only government website that's actually user-friendly. But you'll see if you go there that all of the proposals for the DMCA right now, anything that they're proposing as changes to the DMCA, are changes to the anti-circumvention provisions. They're trying to increase the exemptions for that Anti-Circumvention Act. There are certain things that fall under anti-circumvention provisions in the DMCA, but that are created as an exemption to say that it's okay to circumvent them in this case and in this circumstance. Some of those are depend on the context. For example, it's okay to do things perhaps in universities and research institutions that it's not okay to do in your business. There are certain things that it's okay to do with home use and home copying that it's not okay to do if you're going to give copies to your friends or put them up on the internet. There are certain things that it's okay to do with your own purchased products. These are where these exemptions come in. Some of the ones they're really looking at right now are basically jailbreaking your phone, being allowed to alter your home, your game device, whether it's an Xbox or PlayStation or what have you. They're trying to allow copies of home movies that you've legitimately purchased for your own, you know, other use. So again, the fact that you don't want your $30 Blu-ray in the car, in the CD player, or the DVD player for the kids, you're allowed to make a copy and put it in there, and that's what they're proposing anyway. You're not right now, but they're proposing that you be allowed to. So that's what's sort of on the table, are these changes to the anti-circumvention provisions, and that's how we are addressing the problems that exist in the problems we've created. And it's still not 100%. It's still not perfect. It's never going to be perfect. That's why every 3 years we come back and revisit this. But this is where we are now. So that's sort of the broad overview of the DMCA and the DMCA triennial review. There's not a lot being reviewed right now. It's all, again, anti-circumvention exemptions. There's a bunch of them, and we can certainly go through them in detail. But I think better than that would be to sort of, let's open this up to a discussion rather than me talking to you. And it's just me, so there's no reason not to just go question and answer and talk about specifics of what you're looking at as far as the DMCA, specifics about what they're considering, and go from there. So anybody have any questions? Any issues? Any thoughts? Anything?
How effective is a DMCA takedown request? Say, I put something up and someone says,
absolutely. Well, let me say this. It's going to depend on the site, because if you send it to, you know, some site run by Uncle Larry who doesn't really pay much attention to what's going on, Uncle Larry probably isn't going to be all that responsive. He's probably not going to know what he's looking at when he gets it. Then again, Uncle Larry probably didn't put in a DMCA, you know, receiver and get the notices properly anyway. YouTube, you know, Amazon, Google, any of those, Comcast or Bell South or any of your major ISPs are going to jump on that as quick as they can. Because otherwise, what you have found on some broke loser's site is now a copyright infringement that you can go after Google for. And while that broke loser might not have anything to give you statutory damages or attorney's fees or justify your action, I don't know if you're all aware of this, but Google's got a little bit of money. And so they are absolutely going to work to protect that money. If they get a takedown notice, they are going to act immediately. And that's kind of the problem. They act immediately to take it down, and then even if it was your legitimate content or not infringing or wasn't problematic, you still have to then go and fight to put it back up, because they're going to act to protect themselves. They're not going to be interested in protecting you. And so if you're the site who's been claimed to be infringing and you weren't, Your content's now gone. If you want that content back up, you've got to go through the whole process of demanding it be put back up, and it's a bit of a hassle. So that's why the misuse of the takedown demands is actually pretty effective, because otherwise, if people ignored them, no one would do anything with them. But since they do respond and respond quickly at most ISPs, it's something that's very easy. And a lot of ISPs have we'll go with the three strikes rule, or look to, you know, have some repeat infringer policy in place. So if you take enough frivolous DMCA takedown notices against someone, they're likely to get their account banned before they even have a chance to turn around and say, hey, I'm not even infringing. So you can stifle competition by simply putting out a bunch of improper notices. That in and of itself is, you know, illegal and gives you rise to a cause of action as the guy who had his account canceled. But again, you're looking at litigation, so it's a problem but the bigger problem would be to not have it. Wow, that got a lot of it. I guess we're just going to go this way.
Can you go into some detail about the appeal process for, you know, if you have a DMCA takedown leveled against you, and also are they considering changes to that appeal process? Is it necessarily a legal one where you must hire a lawyer or you don't get started?
No, they're not considering any changes because it's really not that hard. It's onerous because you've got to, again, go through it. And, again, the problem being that multiple claims, even if they're frivolous, you're not going to be able to respond to with you know, easy forms. But responding to it, the appeal, the response to a DMCA takedown form, and it is a form. You just fill out this form statement, you notarize it and sign it, swear that it's true, and you send it to the ISP. The ISP takes your stuff down. If you want your stuff back, you go get the other form called the DMCA put back, and you fill it out and you sign it, you notarize it, and you say, that's not actually infringing. I do have rights to that content. It is okay to be up there. Put it back. And again, if you send one of those to Google, they turn around and they jump on that and they put it back up. Because if they don't, then they're potentially liable to you. But from their perspective, they're 100% protected from me, the guy who made the original claim, from any copyright claims, because they follow the takedown procedure, they follow the putback procedure, they've complied with the DMCA, and therefore they're in the safe harbor and cannot be sued. So at the end of the day, Google doesn't care if your content is there or not. All they care about is, can I get sued if the content is there? And if you go through the putback procedure, they put it back and your content is back there and Google still can't get sued. So it's not that big a problem. The problem is that depending on whose site it is, you know, again, you're talking about some guy who's got a, you know, small website that he sort of runs on the side. Suddenly having to go through all the putback procedures and comply with that may take him as long as he spends on his site on any given week. It also may be something that is it worth doing? I didn't really care if that content was there either. Some guy came in and stuck up a response in one of my blogs that was, I don't care if it's there or not. So it ends up not going back because it's just not worth going through the putback procedure on. And then again, you've stifled content, stifled expression, and generally caused that problem. But without it, there wouldn't be that content anywhere to begin with. So it's the problems that it has are inherent in the process. It's the same as, I mean, I can misuse any aspect of any law, basically. There's something that can be misused about it. And this is one of those areas where there is certainly misuse, but the greater good comes from having the ability to put out the takedown notice and go through the putback procedure than from not having that procedure in place at all.
All right. What about foreign countries? Specifically China.
They copy stuff. A lot. The thing is, the foreign countries aren't governed by the U.S. Copyright Act, obviously. Foreign countries, however, are subject to the law. See, you're all just waiting for it. I know it. I come here every year, and every year I spill this ice all over the place. But the foreign countries are bound by provisions of the law through treaties. And if we've entered into certain treaties with foreign countries, we have to respect their copyrights, they have to respect our copyrights, and generally that's where we are. Now we come to the countries that didn't enter into those treaties. And what do we do there? Our stuff gets copied. A lot. And there's not a lot to do about it. There really isn't any way that you could go over as an individual and bring an action in China under Chinese law, assuming Chinese law actually prohibited what you were trying to sue under. You could arguably bring some extra jurisdictional claim here against a Chinese company claiming that they caused some harm here. You could certainly do that. They could be obligated to appear. They probably wouldn't. You'd probably get a default, and good job collecting that judgment against that guy in China. So it really, it boils down to there's not a lot we can do about it. There's just going to be copies. But that, again, is not necessarily a creature of U.S. law or a creature of technology or a creature of technology law. You know, Charles Dickens stopped selling books in America because Americans kept copying his books and not paying him his money for them. So Dickens had the problem with people in the colonies copying his stuff and wasn't happy with it. So this is nothing new. The first guy to create anything got it copied and was pissed about it. The question is, how much can we prevent along the way without creating something that's either too stifling or causes an international incident?
Yeah, a bit of a two-parter. The first part is, when you submit a DMCA takedown request, you're signing under quote-unquote penalty of perjury. Are there any criminal actions you can bring against somebody for basically issuing a false takedown notice?
Yes. Well, you can certainly go to your local DA and say that there is a crime that's occurred and you want to have the police investigate it and have him punished criminally for committing this crime of perjury. It is illegal, and they could, in fact, prosecute. I'm aware that Bill Clinton got prosecuted. He's the only person I've ever heard about being prosecuted for perjury. Because as a practical matter, it's not something that most criminal systems are going to try to deal with. You know, at the end of the day, it's, I've got a limited budget, I've got limited resources, I've got limited time in front of the courts, and I can go after the murderers and the child molesters, or I can go after the perjurer. I think I'm going to weigh over here in favor of this. But it does then give rise to civil penalties as well. So that's where, if someone's filing those false DMCA takedowns against you, they do give rise to actions that you can bring against that person who's harming you. But it's in your pockets. It's going to be your resources and your people and your... Why am I buzzing? Got distracted. Your resources and your budget and your time and effort to prosecute those claims in a civil action rather than expecting a criminal court to take any real action on a perjury claim.
And the second part is, what's the practicality of modifying the system to where you have somebody issue a takedown notice and you have more like a summons type system where you say you have to respond within 2 weeks, whatever time frame, or your stuff gets taken down, and that way the onus is put on the person doing the takedown to basically say, here's, I'm ordering you to take this down. Unless you start a cause of action, it still has a safe harbor for the carriers, but it doesn't automatically take down, it doesn't allow the abuse to occur, because you can then go and say, okay, well, no, this is my stuff, let's go to court and let's prove it.
That's not a bad idea. I think the problem you would run into on that, though, is that a lot of content providers would say, let's say you have a 14-day takedown, a 14-day response time, and if I send you a takedown notice, within 14 days you have to respond or it gets taken down. There are a lot of content owners who would say that during that 14 days, I'm losing a lot of revenue, or I'm being harmed significantly, or... you know, there's some other injury occurring to me by virtue of that being up there. You know, let's look at the situation where it's not dollars and cents. Let's look at the situation where, you know, a lot of times people will bring claims under copyright law. If you hack my phone and find all my naked pictures in home porno and put it up on the internet, there is none on my phone. Please don't take my phone. And that might have been what was buzzing. That. So that content is then something that, if I saw my home videos and photographs on the internet, I might go and send a DMCA takedown notice and say, hey, that's my copyrighted material and I want it removed. And you can certainly imagine that I wouldn't want that sitting up there for 14 additional days while somebody else argues over whether my nakedness actually belongs to them. Frankly, 14 days of my nakedness could cause way more harm to the world than But the reality is that the takedown process happening immediately is to benefit the content creator from being further harmed by that distribution. And the idea that if you can respond at any time to put it back. So as long as you can go through that process and put it back, it may have only been gone for a very short time. No, it has to be down within a certain amount of time. And if I can send you a putback, it has to be back up within a reasonable amount of time. But there's no set time that it's got to be gone. I mean, as a practical matter, you're probably not going to know it's gone till it's down and you can't find it anymore and you get the notice from your ISP saying, hey, we've disabled this because it's been claimed to be infringing. So there's going to be some downtime because, as a practical matter, you just won't know that it's gone for a while. But as soon as you figure out that it's gone, you can start going back through the putback procedure. That's the reasonable time standard is a very loose idea. What's reasonable? I don't know. So there's a lot of flexibility on that. And the other thing is, too, think about someone in YouTube's position. Who's telling you to take it down? Disney, ABC, Viacom. Who's telling you to put it back up? Uncle Larry with the website. Uncle Larry is not Disney. If he is, somebody adopt me into that family. But the reality of the world is that the ISP is going to move a lot quicker to protect itself against Disney, who has the funds to sue them, than Uncle Larry, who probably isn't going to sue him if his video doesn't get back up for a week. So if they've got a limited number of monkeys typing in the codes, then they're going to be taking down, you're using the resources to take down before they use the resources to put back. You've got the worst job in the world. Walk back and forth.
Thank you. DMCA takedown notices have been increasingly automated, especially over the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Notably, YouTube published APIs to certain parties such that they could take down videos in a more automated and manageable fashion with the ticketing and things. This led to, at least in part, a large takedown by Viacom of up to maybe 10,000 of its own postings.
Mm-hmm.
And some other notable incidents. Is there going to be any more use of the law to kind of curb automated trolling of videos that result in false positives?
Well, there's already some case law that would arguably prevent that. Arguably, because of course they're going to keep doing it, and unless there's someone who can sue to say I've been harmed, it's not going to get back in front of a court to say whether automated takedowns are proper or not. But we're talking about YouTube. Look to the Google v. Viacom case with the little baby dancing to the Prince video. The holding in that case was that if before I send a takedown notice to someone, I'm supposed to do my own analysis of the work and say, is it really infringing? Is it potentially a fair use? Is there some other thing that's proper about this video, or is it actually a harmful infringement that I should send a takedown notice on? So I'm supposed to do some independent analysis of each work before I send a DMCA takedown. Now, when I send down 10,000 takedowns in the course of a week, there's a very good chance I did not sit down and watch each video in its entirety and analyze the legal circumstances under which it was posted. So there's already that case law in place to say that these massive blast takedown notices are not proper. But as a practical matter, until someone brings some action, and actually that might not be as unlikely as it sounds, because one of the things that's being done is all of the copyright trolling, particularly with you know, porn movies and things like that. The let's put it nicely and call it speculative invoicing rather than extortion. And the you know, the demands that you pony up some settlement funds, or I'm going to name you in this 75 person John Doe count and say that you downloaded, you know, super hot anal black cougars or whatever. That's the one. I got one. we actually got asked by someone to help represent them in that case. I said, no, thank you. But that behavior is being slapped down by courts around the country. They're taking action to separate out the massive groups of plaintiffs. They're taking action to separate out, to quash subpoenas on ISP requests that weren't actually even included in the complaint. There are actions being taken as a result of this mass trolling and extortion that may have repercussions on the people who are taking the mass, takedown demands that are, because they're generally the same people and they're generally in the same action that these things happen. So it's not unlikely that something may come of those cases that affects that type of automated activity. But right now, there's case law in place that would say that that's improper, but there's really nothing that anyone's doing about it.
You sort of started talking about this with the fair use question, but earlier on you had the takedown notice where they say, I own this, and then you said the put back was, oh, no, I own this.
Mm-hmm.
But is that really the common case, or is the common case more, I own this, and then the put back is, no, this is fair use? And if that's the case, isn't that something that has to be decided by a court? How does an ISP or YouTube decide on that?
They don't necessarily have to. You're supposed to say, I own this, or I have some rights to it, to put it back. If you say it's fair use, that's a whole different question. But more importantly, what happens after a DMCA put back notice is that your ISP is out of the picture. You're in the safe harbor. So from the ISP's perspective, I got a takedown notice, I took it down. I got a put back notice, I put it back. I'm out. I don't care anymore. I don't honestly care if it's yours or yours. I don't actually care if it's infringing or not. All I know is I complied with the rules I'm supposed to comply with, so I'm out of the game. What happens next is that the response to a put back is a suit. And when you have a put back, you have to identify yourself, give your name, give your information, give your contact info, enable me to find you as the purported copyright owner. And if I, the purported copyright owner, think you are infringing and now I can find you, I'm going to sue you. And that's where, if you say it's fair use and I say it's not, we'll have that fight in front of a court. But fair use is not a guarantee. Fair use is not a fair use is not a safe harbor. It's something that you will allege when I come knocking at your door with a sheriff and a complaint and say that you're infringing my client's copyright and I'm going to sue you. And it's something that you will raise as a defense in front of a court. You will spend $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 or $50,000 or $75,000 to say that it was fair use. And if you're right, okay, you get to use it. Maybe you get some attorney's fees, maybe you don't. But at the end of the day, you spent an awful lot of time and an awful lot of money proving that it was fair use. So it's not, and if you're wrong, I get my very, very large judgment against you. So it's...
The court decides you're wrong.
Well, that's right. I mean, I'm only right or wrong when the guy in black says so. So that's the reality of the situation. You don't know that it's fair use. You can't know that it's fair use because I can't know that it's fair use because none of us are going to be able to tell till some guy bangs the gavel and says that was fair use. So it's not to say I'm going to do a putback based on fair use is very, very, very risky, because you still have to swear that you have the proper rights to use that, and you really don't know if you do.
You were mentioning case law earlier. Do you think the recent rulings on space shifting and digital lockers will have any effect on the review this year?
Well, just look back through half here and make sure I have before I say anything. To some extent, they are. What they're trying to do is with the triennial review. Let me just tell you what we have here. We have proposed as exemptions on the prohibition to circumvention. Literary works in the public domain made available on digital copies. Literary works distributed electronically that contain digital rights management or other access controls. Computer programs, I'm not reading the whole thing, I'm just going to be. Computer programs that enable lawfully acquired video game consoles to execute lawfully acquired software applications. Personal computing devices are the same thing. Computer programs that enable wireless telephone handsets and tablets to execute lawfully obtained software applications. Computer programs in the form of firmware or software that enable mobile devices to connect to wireless communications network. Then the next we are all jailbreaking your phone. Then we get into motion pictures on DVDs that are lawfully made and acquired. Solely to accomplish the incorporation of short portions of motion pictures into new works for the purposes of criticism or comment. Audiovisual works on DVDs that are lawfully made and acquired, where circumvention is undertaken for the purposes of extracting clips for non-commercial videos. Audiovisual works where circumvention is undertaken for the purposes of extracting clips for non-commercial videos, it's the same thing. Basically, your personal use and comment, fair use things. But again, it's a very risky the rest of them all go to motion pictures being put into different formats. So aside from changing format on your audiovisual works, it really isn't anything that would be affected by that. Now, again, remember that these things come down. The requests for revision that come in the triennial review come in advance of the review. So more recent things are probably going to come up at the next 3-year period. But to some extent, the different use of the audiovisual files is already trying to take into account some of those issues and allowing you to put your content into a different source and for a different purpose. So that's the closest we've got on the triennial review right now. Was there another question down there in the back?
I came in a bit late, so I apologize if you've already answered this question.
I'm not going to answer it again.
Okay. but in your experience or in your knowledge, is there any notable difference in outcome between bench and jury trials for infringement, or is most of this being decided by summary judgment?
Most of it's being settled as a practical matter. Federal litigation is ridiculously expensive, and it is very, very difficult to take a copyright case all the way through to trial. It's very costly, it's very time-consuming, and it requires the use of experts to analyze the similarities of many things. It requires just discovery of people in remote locations, unfortunately. When my neighbor builds his fence on my lawn, I get to sue my neighbor, and we're both pretty easy to find. When I'm being infringed by some guy in Sheboygan, then I've got a copyright action in the Northern District of Georgia, but I've got to go all the way out to Sheboygan to start taking depositions of his employees and his friends and family and all the people who I might want to talk to. So it's a very complicated process that costs a lot of money. And this isn't just copyright. As a practical matter, 90% of cases that get filed get settled before they go to trial. But on that 8 to 10% that might actually go to trial, is there a difference in jury verdicts and bench verdicts? Yes. Which one's better? Depends on your case, because it's going to depend. Juries are better for a sympathetic case. If I've got somebody who, you know, some poor artist who's, you know, barely putting food on the table, is having her work stolen, and somebody's making millions of dollars on it, I'm going to take that before a jury. If I've got Disney suing that same poor mom for downloading a princess video, but I probably don't want to take that in front of a jury, even though it's absolutely illegal and I can get that claim. Your sympathy is going to go the wrong direction, so you'd want a bench trial. There are a lot of other analyses that would go into which one's better, but as a practical matter, that's where it comes down. It's not how they apply the law. It's not where you get the greater number. It all comes down to whether or not I can influence the jury or the judge more to my favor.
Anybody more else? Questions?
What is your opinion of the characterization of the sort of mess of copyright for the last 70 years as the Disney laws or the Mickey Mouse laws? I think that was Cory Doctorow or somebody.
Well, I think that that's... I don't think that's wrong, because that damn mouse is never going to the public domain if they have anything to say about it. But the thing is that that's actually a large... in my mind, a large part of what's creating the problems that we're fighting. At the end of the day, my opinion on copyright piracy is copyright piracy is piracy. You're stealing. It's easy to steal now, and it's simple, and it's quick, and it's not that harmful in many instances, and so people do it all the time, but at the end of the day, we all speed, too. It doesn't make it not illegal. The problem is that you're sort of encouraging piracy by making copyright last forever. And without having any appreciable way for something to fall into the public domain to be used by other people and to be altered and changed and used for other creative works, you're really just inviting in the very crime you're trying to stop. You know, when copyright lasted 28 years to be renewed for another 28, and most people didn't bother to renew or forgot to renew or didn't get their paperwork in time, and as a practical matter, 3/4 of your copyrights ran for about 28 years, that was pretty reasonable. People could use it.
7 and 7?
Way back.
Yeah.
Yeah, but... again, the question being how long your work is viable and how easy it is to copy, guides what that is. The issue of a copyright that lasts for the life of the creator plus 75 years is, in my mind, frankly absurd. I don't make the laws. I only enforce the laws, so I don't have anything to do with that. But I think that it's creating the problems that we're trying to stop. It's engendering much of the piracy that people are now taking all these extreme measures to try to prevent, because you're allowing a monopoly for an unendable period. So I mean, the characterization of them as the Disney laws is frankly pretty accurate, because they're the biggest lobby for increasing those, but it is not, in my mind, a very good thing.
Because the DMCA takedown exists now, does that kind of render the hosts able to sort of ignore other requests that aren't DMCA takedowns?
Most don't, actually. Most of your larger ISPs are going to have some provisions in place in their EULAs or their terms of service that say not only are we going to comply with a DMCA takedown notice, we're going to essentially follow our own internal procedure that mirrors that DMCA takedown notice, so that if you send me a notice of infringement of some other trademark right or patent right or some intellectual property provision that's not governed by the DMCA, I'm still going to act to take it down and disable it, and you can act to put it back up if you want to. The reason they're doing that is because there's no explicit safe harbor for trademarks or any other intellectual property. But as a practical matter, I think that the thought being, if I ever got dragged into court as an ISP, I could say, well, I did my best to try to take care of these actions as soon as I knew of them. I couldn't have been contributorily infringing, because when I found out that it was infringing, I took it down immediately. So as a practical matter, while the Digital Millennium Copyright Act safe harbor only applies to copyright, and I can only send a takedown for my copyrighted content, that model has shaped how ISPs react to claims in general.
I guess to feed off this question, if an ISP were to come up with their own policy and had your content taken down through that policy, and they don't really have a policy to put it back, or not really following through with a policy they have set forth, isn't that sort of kind of also ripe for abuse, because you can think of collusion between an ISP and a content provider?
It could be. The situation there would be, though, if they didn't provide for a response, or they didn't, especially if they didn't follow through with their own provided response, you're going to end up in a situation where then, instead of being liable to the content creator who purports to be the content creator who demands that they take it down, they're going to be liable to the actual copyright content creator or owner who put it back up.
Even if it wasn't a DMC takedown, it was their own internal takedown, if something was taken down, could you put a DMC, put back?
Right. Well, that's what... I shouldn't say copyright. Let's say trademarks again.
Right.
If I send a notice to GoDaddy, who hosts your website, and I say that he's infringing my trademark, they'll take down that portion of your site, or they'll disable your whole site, or they'll do whatever they do to prevent that trademark infringement under their own internal guidelines. If you then turn around and say, hey, he doesn't actually own that trademark, that's my trademark, here's where I'm using it, I demand you put that back, and you're causing me harm because my e-commerce site is down because you've disabled it, and they don't, then you've got a right against your ISP for improperly disabling your content. So it still gives there's a liability inherent in that. That means that most of your larger corporate ISPs are going to try to avoid the liability by acting in accordance with your putback as well. Okay. Even if they don't, and that's even if they don't have a specific provision in place to say that. I think if you go to your ISP and say you've disabled content that was improper to disable, and you're causing me harm in the doing, they're going to go ahead and respond and put it back.
How long are they required to hold on to that content? Do they have to hold on to it indefinitely after a takedown, or in terms of just taking up space on their servers, how long?
That's not really anything that's addressed in the takedown or the putback procedures. As a practical reality, if someone's planning on actually bringing a suit, if I send a takedown and I demand your information, or you come through with a putback and provide your information, and I want to sue you, I'm going to also send a letter to the ISP demanding that they preserve that content for evidentiary purposes. If I don't send them that, they really don't have any obligation to keep it at all. Whatever their own internal guidelines are for storing content would be the only guide as to how that happens. If I send them that, though, they're supposed to keep it for as long as I need them to for the purposes of litigation. Anybody else? Well, we sort of got off the triennial review and onto the safe harbor quite a bit, but
I was talking about before the turning the system around. Is there, you're using the system as it is now, the when you put get a takedown notice, there's a window of time that you have,
mm-hmm.
correct? It's a reasonable time frame to take it down. Is there a possibility that as a service provider, I still have safe harbor if as soon as I get a takedown notice for some a user's content, I send them that takedown notice saying, now you've got, within our policy, a week to respond to it with a putback before we'll actually have the, we're still within a reasonable time to take it down. And then I can say, if they don't, then I can go ahead and take it down at that point and still be within safe harbor. Is that something that's is still possible?
It's possible. I'd say whether it was proper would depend on the court, but I think as long as you had a reasonable window and frankly, we do the safe harbor on the years where there's not a triennial review, so I didn't review all the safe harbor provisions coming in here today, but trying to remember what the reasonable time has sort of been interpreted to be. A week would probably still be okay. But I think that if you didn't move quickly, someone would potentially claim that you were not properly complying. If you did give that, you know, you said, look, I'm going to take 5 days or a week or 3 days or whatever, and if you can, I'm going to send this to you immediately, and if you respond immediately, I'm going to say, well, here's my response, and I didn't have to take it down, or I took it down for 30 seconds, put it back up immediately, then you're certainly in compliance with the letter of the law. And I think that if there was a putback in place before or after you took it down, the requirement is that it goes back and I have to sue that person anyway. So I doubt that anyone would actually bring a claim against you and try to test whether or not that came under the safe harbor unless there was some massive harm being caused by it, as long as you did, in fact, act promptly. All right, well, if you want to go look at the all of the provisions that are up for the triennial review, again, go to copyright.gov. Basically, we're just trying to make it legal to jailbreak your phone, jailbreak your game system, and allow you to move your movies around. But there's a lot of nuances to that, and just like everything else, everything that we do has unexpected and unanticipated effects. So if you guys have any comments or any thoughts that you'd like to share with the Copyright Office on how these things should or ought to work, or what problems you might see, that's exactly what this process is for. They want guidance from the public as to how the copyright should be enacted and how it ought to be altered. So go give them that and provide them that feedback, and we'll see what happens in 3 more years. All right. If there's any other questions, I think we're pretty much wrapped up.
Thank you.